Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Only Exceedingly Shy by Jan Roland. Narrated by Harry Frost. Chapter 1. It is commonly understood that a woman possessing little fortune and few prospects must accept whatever man favours her with his proposal. Indeed, in a society where a woman was of gentle birth and possessed no fortune of her own, the prospect of genteel poverty was a genuine threat. Such a woman has little but her charms to recommend her, and no way to increase her income should the worst happen, leaving her without a protector. Miss Elizabeth Bennet of Longbourn in Hertfordshire was not unaware of the situation faced by her family. Her father, Mr. Henry Bennet, was a man who preferred the comfort of his library to the work of the estate, and as he oversaw a property entailed to a distant cousin, and there was little money put away for their future support, the consequences of all five of his daughters remaining single could not be overstated. Yet when the opportunity arrived for Elizabeth to marry and save herself, her sisters, and her mother from that dreaded fate, she could do nothing but reject it. Many ladies in her situation did not espouse the same position. That was not lost on Elizabeth's sensibilities. That her family should call upon her to make the sacrifice and provide them future support was unfair, for her father should shoulder that responsibility. Elizabeth's opinion did not blind her to the possibility that her sensibilities might be cold comfort should the worst come to pass, but that did not shake her resolve. Of more importance was her father's cousin, the aforementioned heir, a man Elizabeth could not tolerate for more than a few moments, let alone a lifetime. Mr. Collins was servile, stupid, possessed only a basic knowledge of proper behaviour or sense of hygiene, and was altogether a repulsive specimen. Elizabeth had done as much as she could to inform the man that she was not interested in his proposal, but spurred by her mother's fears of the entail and his own insensibility, Mr. Collins had pressed his suit, only to find Elizabeth firm in her determination to have nothing to do with his overtures. That Mr. Bennet had supported her had been a surprise only to her mother, for Elizabeth, who loved him despite his failures, had known he would never force her, his favourite daughter, to accept the proposal of an imbecile. To find proof of her cousin's unsuitability, one had only to remember how he had repined her loss as a prospective bride for all of 3 days before engaging himself to Elizabeth's closest friend, Charlotte Lucas. Given the speed at which the engagement had come about, Mr. Collins had not so much as passed Charlotte on a street before the ball at Netherfield. She supposed he must have determined to engage himself to her the very evening Elizabeth had refused him. It appeared Mr. Collins did not care to even make a pretense of courting. Given his constant blathering about his patroness, pleasing her with an engagement must be his only concern. The only reason their neighbours would not look on the hurried engagement with raised brows must be the lack of a previous acquaintance and his impending return to Kent and his parish there, for Charlotte had informed Elizabeth that they were not to marry until the new year. Elizabeth could not say accepting Mr. Collins was the most sensible thing that Charlotte had ever done. For a time she could not understand it at all. Then Charlotte explained her reasons, and Elizabeth, while she could never have contemplated the choice her friend made, understood her sentiments. Eager to preserve Charlotte's friendship, despite what she felt was a desperate mistake, Elizabeth had wished her friend all the happiness in the world and kept her own counsel. In return, Charlotte accepted it and maintained the fiction, for her friend knew her well enough to understand Elizabeth's opinion. Thus the matter should have ended. Elizabeth would trouble herself no more, for she was not made for melancholy. Mr. Collins had proposed, and she had rejected him. Her father supported her, and thus the matter was closed. It might have been closed, had her mother been anyone other than who she was.
"Oh, to think that I must give way to Charlotte Lucas, of all women! How shall I bear the shame, and because of my daughter's irrational insistence on having her way?"
On and on Mrs. Bennet lamented, accusing Elizabeth of being unnatural, disobedient, disobliging, and any other adjective she could conceive that described her anger. Elizabeth could not go into a room without her mother raising the subject, could not partake of a simple meal without her mother's condemnation, and even dreamed of her mother's voice haranguing her. Even her father became so annoyed with his wife that he told her more than once to cease her caterwauling, though his instruction produced nothing more than an injured silence and reproachful looks that would give way to her continued diatribe the moment he departed from the room. At least Mrs. Bennet did not invade Elizabeth's bedchamber, which led to her spending as much time as she could therein.
"You listen to me, Miss Lizzie," spat she frequently. "If you go about with the foolish intention of refusing every marriage proposal, you shall end an old maid."
It was not worth the ensuing aggravation to point out that refusing every proposal, should Elizabeth be so fortunate as to receive more than one, could end in no other way. Thus her mother's statement was nonsensical.
"I have received only one proposal," said Elizabeth calmly, knowing her even tone further infuriated her mother.
"And you shall never receive another," accused Mrs. Bennet.
"In this, mamma," replied Elizabeth, still unconcerned, "you appear to espouse the same opinion as Mr. Collins, for he informed me of that himself."
"He is correct. Then where will you be? You must shift for yourself, for I will retain neither the resources nor the inclination to keep you myself."
"And I would not endure this for another minute if I had a choice," muttered Elizabeth.
It was thus, a few nights before the Gardiners, the Bennet's family from London, were to arrive for their annual Christmas visit, Jane found Elizabeth in her bedroom. Of late, the room had been her refuge from her mother's shrill voice, and Elizabeth made good use of it. On that evening, however, it was near the time to retire, and Elizabeth had been engaged in staring at her reflection in the mirror, contemplating all that had happened these past months. Jane's presence was welcome, leading to Elizabeth pushing her contemplations aside in favour of her most beloved sister.
"Lizzie," said Jane in greeting in her usual quiet tone, "I'm gratified you are still awake, for I wished to discuss something with you."
"Oh?" asked Elizabeth, arching a brow at her sister.
"I hope Mamma has not drafted you to her way of thinking and sent you to berate me in her stead." "Even had I agreed with Mamma," replied Jane, "I cannot imagine I would have scolded you for refusing Mr. Collins."
Elizabeth agreed, grasping her sister's hand, a sign of affection.
"If I am at all honest, I must confess that Mamma has surprised me. That she can hold a grudge better than any of us is beyond doubt, but she has been positively indefatigable. I might have expected her to retreat to her bedchamber to nurse her poor nerves in private." "I might have thought the same."
Jane paused for a long moment, her glances at Elizabeth suggesting she had something to say, but was not certain how to say it. Or perhaps she knew what she wished to say, but could not predict Elizabeth's response. To reassure her sister, Elizabeth favoured her with a wide smile, which Jane did not hesitate to return. This appeared to break Jane's indecision, for she spoke at once.
"Lizzie, I know you suggested I should go to London when Aunt and Uncle return, but I wonder if it would not be better if you went in my stead."
Caught off guard, Elizabeth stared at her sister.
"You wish me to go to London?" "I do not wish to give up your company," replied Jane, "but it would be best if you gained a little distance from our mother."
Elizabeth frowned.
"Yes, I suppose you are correct. If I were away from Longbourn for a time, Mother's nerves would settle. She will probably always deplore my decision, and I have no doubt she will often bring it to my attention whenever she is peeved with me. But what of you, Jane? The purpose of your going to London was to see Mr. Bingley again. Do you not wish to visit your friend?"
This time Jane was silent for much longer than her previous hesitation, deep in thought. At length Jane sighed and offered a wan smile, one that came nowhere near her eyes.
"At your suggestion, as I recall."
"It was," agreed Elizabeth.
I am still of the opinion that Mr. Bingley cared for you, and only failed to return because of the machinations of his sisters and his friend."
"Perhaps you are correct," replied Jane quietly. "But Lizzie..."
Jane struggled for the words, sighing again heavily after a moment's silence.
"The fact is that I've been thinking about this almost since you suggested it. My conclusions tell me that I should not go to London."
"Tell me, Jane," prompted Elizabeth.
"I am uncertain of Mr. Bingley's esteem,"
was Jane's simple reply.
"He was ever so attentive to me when he was in residence at Netherfield, but a man so filled with admiration for a woman would return, would he not?"
"Again, I will remind you of my opinion of his sisters," said Elizabeth.
"And that is no more a good reflection of his character than looking at me with eyes of infatuation and then forgetting about me the moment I am not before him."
Elizabeth could not hide her grimace, for she knew Jane was no less than correct.
"I do not believe it of him, but I cannot produce any evidence of my opinion."
"It is impossible to know what to think," said Jane. "But even more than this, you swayed me to your opinion of Mr. Bingley's sisters."
"I have?" asked Elizabeth, surprised to hear her sister say as much.
"Thoughts of Mr. Bingley have not consumed me utterly, Lizzie,"
replied Jane, her eyes filling with a teasing glint.
"I do esteem Mr. Bingley, but I am capable of considering other matters."
"Never would I suggest otherwise," replied Elizabeth with a laugh.
Jane shook her head.
"Since Miss Bingley arrived in the neighbourhood, I esteemed her, for I cannot have misunderstood her overtures of friendship. Yet when I look back on the conversations we shared, the expressions I saw on her face when she thought she was unobserved, I cannot but give your opinion credence. Now I am convinced."
Elizabeth, regretful at this evidence of her sister's unhappiness, shook her head and reached out to pull Jane in for an embrace. Even now she was certain that Mr. Bingley still cared for her and would not move from her opinion unless the man himself told her otherwise. Jane's assertion of Mr. Bingley's character, however, she could not ignore. Would a man of confidence and moral character allow his friends and relations to sway him from a woman he truly loved? Elizabeth could not suppose he would, unless he valued other concerns more than love. She had never thought him to be such a man.
"Therefore, I wish you to go to London in my stead, Lizzie," said Jane. "In London I have nothing to anticipate but a visit to a woman I now suspect disdains me. I expect she will do everything to keep me from her brother's notice should I deign to present myself at her door. You, however, may escape our mother's continued laments if you remove yourself from her presence, and I shall be quite content to remain at Longbourn. As for Mr. Bingley..."
Jane paused and smiled, a tremulous sort of expression.
"It is, after all, a man's responsibility to make his sentiments known and make love to a woman. Should Mr. Bingley decide he wishes to direct such attention to me, he is familiar with Longbourn's location. If he does not, then I must suppose I am better to forget him than to wish for what might never be, to hope for the attention of a man who will not fight for the hand of a woman he supposedly loves."
"I cannot say you are incorrect, Jane."
Jane nodded.
"Then, if you wish, you may take my place when aunt and uncle return to London. I cannot imagine they will protest."
"I cannot imagine they will," laughed Elizabeth. "After all, we have not even laid the scheme before them yet."
"No, I suppose we have not," replied Jane. "Then we can speak to them when they come."
As Jane had asserted, the gardeners were pleased to extend an invitation to Elizabeth to return to London with them. They were of such character and discernment that the reason for Elizabeth's desire to absent herself from Longbourn for a time became readily apparent at once.
"When did you refuse Mr. Collins's suit, Lizzie?"
asked Aunt Gardiner the first night after the gardeners arrived in Hertfordshire.
"The day after the ball at Netherfield," replied Elizabeth, with a disgusted shake of her head.
"It was November the 27th, as I recall."
Aunt Gardiner nodded distractedly, her eyes finding Mrs. Bennet, where her husband had distracted her for the moment.
"If she has been this vocal the entire 4 weeks since the event, I can understand why you were desperate to escape," It was all Elizabeth could do not to roll her eyes, for she knew her aunt would object to such an obvious display of disdain for the woman who had birthed her.
Yes, aunt, a break from Mama's displeasure would be a boon.
Then we shall be happy to offer it, replied Mrs. Gardiner warmly, but I suggest we do not inform her of our intent to offer you sanctuary. Mrs. Gardiner's expression became mischievous. I would not wish to share your fate for the days we are staying here. Elizabeth laughed along with her. Perish the thought, aunt. I shall keep my own counsel. The day after the Gardiner's arrival in Hertfordshire was the date of Sir William's annual Christmas party at Lucas Lodge. In the last several years, the Gardiners had timed their arrival to allow them to attend what Sir William considered the social event of the season in the community, which provided them with an opportunity to mingle with the Bennet's neighbours. There were a few who turned up their noses at Mr. Gardiner's profession, but no one was high enough on society's scale to make an issue of it, least of all Sir William. Not only was he fond of company, but his history as a merchant himself rendered any notion that he would hold himself aloof by virtue of his current privileged position absurd. Not long after their arrival, he and Mr. Gardiner were engaged in a lively discussion of business, much to Elizabeth's amusement. Whether Sir William's boasting concerning that evening's entertainment was grounded in fact, Elizabeth could not say, yet the Christmas gathering was always well attended. Most of the neighbourhood was present, for no one would dare to hold a competing event. This rendered the rooms of Lucas Lodge a tight fit, especially when one counted the militia officers who had turned out in full force. For a time, Elizabeth stood and spoke with Wickham, a fact which seemed to concern her aunt, and she was not hesitant to voice her opinion when Elizabeth separated from the officer. For the rest of the evening, however, Wickham was much engaged in the dancing, and after a time it appeared his interest fixed upon Mary King. Elizabeth found, to her aunt's relief, she harboured no jealousy for the girl of whom she knew no ill. The man's apparent defection did not affect her in the slightest. In time, Elizabeth found herself with Charlotte, carrying on a lively conversation with her oldest friend. Knowing Charlotte would leave for her own home early in the new year, Elizabeth cherished these moments, knowing they would separate, their time in each other's company thereafter infrequent. It would have been more pleasant if Mr. Collins had not seen fit to intrude upon their tête-à-tête.
"I hope you will pardon me for saying it," said Elizabeth to her friend, when another had distracted her affianced. "But I am grateful Mr. Collins is staying at Lucas Lodge rather than Longbourn."
Elizabeth gave her friend a grin, intending to show her that she meant no slight against her betrothed, though the thought hovered in the back of her mind.
"My mother would not be easy with Mr. Collins in residence at Longbourn."
"Nor would she scruple to share her opinion with you all," said Charlotte with a nod. "It is a breach of propriety for him to stay at Lucas Lodge during our engagement, even for the few days he is to be here. But my father feels it is a minor one, considering his residence in another county." With a smile at her friend, knowing she was obliquely agreeing with her assessment, Elizabeth sipped her drink.
"Have you firmed the date of the wedding?"
"We shall marry on January the 16th, replied Charlotte. "Mr. Collins wished to marry earlier, but since he obtained leave to visit now at Christmastide, he does not think it wise to leave his flock again so soon."
"Yes, I can see that,"
said Elizabeth, regarding the parson, who was at present regaling Mrs. Gardiner with tales of his patroness, no doubt. As she stood listening to him, Aunt Gardiner caught Elizabeth's eye and raised a brow. Elizabeth was hard-pressed to avoid laughing at the sight.
"Then you will go to Kent soon thereafter?"
asked Elizabeth, turning back to her friend.
"We shall stay the wedding night and go into Kent the day after," replied Charlotte.
"That is most excellent," said Elizabeth.
"You must be eager to bask under the condescension of the great Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Mr. Collins must wish to introduce you to his benefactress as soon as may be."
"I suspect he is," replied Charlotte. "He has informed me that Lady Catherine is eager to see me, and has promised to visit the parsonage."
It was not politic to inform her friend that Mr. Collins had threatened Elizabeth with just such a fate during his ill-fated proposal to her, There did not seem to be anything else to say on the subject that would not betray Elizabeth's revulsion for her father's cousin, so she determined not to say anything else at all. Then Charlotte turned to her and regarded her with beseeching eyes.
"Lizzie, I hope to hear from you often, for I shall depend upon your witty and interesting correspondence."
Charlotte paused and blushed, offering a wry smile.
"Once we are married, I cannot imagine I will return to Hertfordshire often. Since distance will separate us, I hope you will consent to continue our friendship through letters."
"Of course I shall, Charlotte," exclaimed Elizabeth, grasping her friend's hands, conveying all the affection in her heart.
"Nothing would please me more than to retain your friendship."
Charlotte's brilliant smile informed her of her friend's gratitude, and showed her friend's natural beauty. None of those who branded her plain would think her anything other than pretty, should she show such an expression to them.
"Will you also consent to visit me?" asked Charlotte.
"If you wish me to come, I should be happy to do so," said Elizabeth.
"I do wish it. My father and Maria are to visit in March, and while my father will stay for a week, Maria will stay for six. Will you be one of the party?"
"Charlotte, my dear, I wish you had consulted with me before offering this invitation."
Elizabeth drew back from her friend in surprise, for she had not noticed the approach of her father's cousin. The man stood before them, regarding them, displeasure etched upon his furrowed brow, his dissatisfaction with his future wife interspersed with his contemptuous glances at Elizabeth. It appeared Charlotte did not know what to say, for surprise had robbed her of the ability to respond.
"A wife, Miss Lucas," said the man, inserting himself into the silence, "must always hold her husband's comfort foremost in her mind. Furthermore, she must exist in obedience to his dictates, for the man is head of the house, as the Holy Scripture tells us."
Mr. Collins turned to regard Elizabeth, his pomposity turning to disdain.
"I cannot imagine you considered my comfort when you thought to invite this woman, my cousin's daughter, and the woman who refused my generosity, to my house."
"Mr. Collins," tried Charlotte, but the man held up a hand.
"No, Miss Lucas," said Mr. Collins, "I fear I must insist. I understand that you, as the future mistress of my house, will possess the power to invite whom you please. Yet I cannot countenance this invitation given all that has passed."
"Do not suppose I shall interrupt your comfort, Mr. Collins," said Elizabeth, her contempt now equal to his. "Should you not wish my presence, I shall not impose upon your hospitality."
Mr. Collins allowed her a tight nod.
"I suppose I must allow you some small measure of perception, cousin. Were you to stay in my house, I cannot imagine the experience would be anything other than awkward for us both."
It was best to refuse to say anything else, though any number of scornful comments crossed her mind. She refrained, knowing it would only embarrass her friend and make matters worse.
"I shall, of course, allow you the power of choosing your friends," said the parson, turning away from Elizabeth and ignoring her altogether. "I hope that you will bend your thought toward performing your duties as a wife and greeting my esteemed patroness, Lady Catherine de Bourgh, with the respect her situation warrants, not only because of her birth, but also her position of authority over us."
"In that," said Elizabeth, drawing his attention back to her, "I suspect you will have little enough to complain, Mr. Collins. My friend is the best of women. I cannot imagine she will do anything other than make you proud that you secured her affections."
Elizabeth hoped God would not hold such statements against her, for other than what she had said about Charlotte, she knew that there was little affection in Charlotte's heart for such a ridiculous toad as Mr. Collins. The man noted nothing of Elizabeth's thoughts, however, regarding her for a long moment before he nodded his agreement.
"Of that I have little doubt, cousin."
So saying, it was the most succinct phrase Elizabeth had ever heard issue from his lips, he departed, soon accosting some other unfortunate for his special brand of civility. Charlotte swallowed thickly and closed her eyes for a moment, drawing in her composure, and when she opened them, Elizabeth could see the disappointment in their depths.
"I thank you, Lizzie, for not making any more of that situation than you did."
"Say nothing of it, Charlotte," said Elizabeth, pressing her friend's hands. "I would not bring you discomfort for the world." Charlotte offered her a watery smile.
"I also apologize for Mr. Collins's unseemly behavior. Now I must regret that I shall not enjoy your company in the spring."
Curious, Elizabeth regarded her friend.
"You did not expect him to deny you my company?" "I could not be certain."
Charlotte pinked in embarrassment, but she bravely offered.
"I had hoped to obtain your consent without his notice, for then it would be a fait accompli. It is unfortunate he interrupted us."
Misfortune was far from Elizabeth's thoughts at that moment. While she could not blame her friend for her stratagem and would have willingly braved Mr. Collins's displeasure to keep her society, Elizabeth suspected 6 weeks in company with her father's cousin would lead to extreme discomfort, for he was not the sort of man to remain silent about his grievances. They drifted apart thereafter, leaving Elizabeth pensive and upset. Their future interaction was now confined to news in letters, if Mr. Collins allowed it, and Elizabeth could not help but wonder if that bit of closeness would not fade. It was unfortunate, to be certain, but Elizabeth could not see any way for their friendship to survive while Mr. Collins held to his grudge. Unfortunately for them both, Elizabeth thought him capable of maintaining that resentment long after most others would have forgotten the matter entirely. Chapter 2. Relief was an entirely insufficient description of Elizabeth's feelings when she returned to London with her aunt and uncle.
"It is a respite from your mother, is it not?"
Elizabeth turned a smile on her aunt. The Gardiner townhouse was a comfortable and orderly home, perhaps not as large as expected for a man of her uncle's consequence in the world, but sufficient for his needs. It was also close to his warehouses, which he found convenient, though he had told Elizabeth more than once that the size of his family and his growing children might provoke him to search for a new home before long.
"Yes, it is," said Elizabeth with a nod to her aunt. "While I do not wish to speak ill of my mother, she has been impossible to live with since Mr. Collins' aborted proposal."
Her mother had been more than that in all truth, for when she had learned of Elizabeth's imminent departure from Longbourn, she had not taken the news well.
"Perhaps you should take Lydia or Jane," her mother had sniffed when learning of the matter. "They deserve it more than such a disobliging child as Elizabeth."
"It is on my advice that Lizzie is to go, Mama."
Every eye in the room found Jane, Mrs. Bennet's, in anger, while the rest of the company peered at her in shock. It was not like Jane to speak in so bold a fashion, for she was more apt to promote harmony when others were arguing.
"Lizzie suggested I go to London,"
said Jane, as her mother sputtered for a response.
"When you would not cease your comments about her response to Mr. Collins's proposal, I advised her to go in my stead."
"It would be best if you allowed the matter to rest, Mrs. Bennet," said her husband, when she drew breath for what likely would have been an impressive rant. "You may wish to berate Jane for speaking to you in such a fashion, but you have only yourself to blame. When they came to me for my permission for the scheme, I gave it at once, knowing it would return harmony to my home in the most expeditious manner possible."
From that moment, Mrs. Bennet had been silent, a welcome relief for Elizabeth. She doubted her mother had changed her opinion to any degree, and knew she would return to the grievance whenever she felt used in the future. For now, her silence was enough.
"Some would call you foolish for refusing such an eligible match,"
said Mrs. Gardiner, drawing Elizabeth's attention back to her aunt. Elizabeth refrained from rolling her eyes by only the slimmest of margins.
"I apologize, Aunt, but I could see nothing in my future other than misery and regret should I accept Mr. Collins's suit."
Mrs. Gardiner eyed her for a long moment before she spoke. "For many, marriage is the object rather than the specific partner. If you were the daughter of an earl, you could afford to be discriminating in your choice of husband."
"Devil's advocate?"
asked Elizabeth, grinning at her aunt. Mrs. Gardiner's character was familiar enough for Elizabeth to know she did not truly espouse such opinions as Elizabeth marrying a dullard such as Mr. Collins.
I merely attempt to discern...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?